Hi everyone, it's Dr. Denise. This is the Dr. Denise Show, and this is the Embrace Your Neurostyle series, and I feel honored and humbled to have Dr. Denise Berger on today. How are you?
Good, Dr. Denise. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast again. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
Oh my goodness. And oh my, I couldn't even believe it. I don't know how everyone's feeling, but every time I get to see someone that I haven't seen in a long time, it just gives me a smile. I know this is an audio recording, but you know, Dr. Berger is passionate as a businesswoman, philanthropist, and professor at Pepperdine. And I've been really honored to be a guest lecturer for the last 7 years. I just saw you recently. So it's just so nice to have you here, but also I've just saw you in person.
Yes. And how wonderful to be back in person too. Last year's class was online, obviously, and it was still impactful. We can do impactful things online, but being in person just adds that extra dimension.
You know, absolutely. And I'm going to put not only your bio in the links for this show, but also some other shows you and I have done. But this new series, Embrace Your Neurostyle and Beyond, is like almost like my gift back to myself and to everyone for remembering like who I am and why I launched a brand into the world, which was how do we change the way we think, talk, and act about all things to do with mental health. And so the word neurostyle is defined as we all process and perceive things in our own unique way. And when Kathleen O'Toole interviewed me, she was awesome. She's like, oh yeah, you're a Fabulous Five. I'm like, I love it. So the Fabulous Five that kind of further define neurostyle is it includes multi-dimensions of biological, psychological, social, cultural, and spiritual. And then the sixth sense would be energy or intuition. And so one of my reasons for being so excited to have you on today is I feel like you represent, as a female who empowers other women, as someone who serves their community, as someone who has been on the front lines in corporate America, trying to do inclusion, trying to look at perception, trying to look at gender, sexuality, race. Like you've actually needed to practice these concepts in person in the business world and now in the classroom and also as a human being. So I just want to tell you, I'm like honored that you said yes to this interview today.
Oh my gosh, Denise, you're too kind.
Well, but the thing is, you know, I think it's important you know who you are, but when you're trying to decide, well, why should I listen to this? You know, I like data and I like people that have experience. Mm. So maybe you can take us through and just put the hat on of, you know, Denise, that Dr. Denise who, well, you were Denise at the time, then you went and got your, you got your EDD in organizational leadership from Pepperdine, and then your dissertations on corporate social responsibility. So you have experienced it live on the ground at Aon and other places. And then you grew as a human being and decided, I want to take this further and do some deep dives. And you have so much wisdom. So can you start us maybe on like how you even feel about maybe the word neurostyle and how that applies to you and your perception?
Mm-hmm. I think you coining the expression neurostyle is so empowering to any individual. I mean, just having such a powerful word to consolidate very complex concepts of how we as human beings, as an individual, come together, how our systems come together. And by systems, you know, we obviously don't just mean our anatomy, our anatomical systems, but we mean our thoughts, how we've been raised, the influences of our background, of our generations. You talk about epigenetics as well. what constructs we've been raised with in terms of spirituality, and then the energy that we give off in a room, right? There's such a thing even called pheromones that are invisible kind of forces of energy. So I think having all of that bundled up in NeuroStyle for me has been very empowering, that there isn't just one approach. You know, I mean, when I started in the workforce in corporate America many, many years ago, you had to play it a certain way. You walked into the workforce.
Can I just say something?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's call this, you know, we like to make it fun, like the Fabulous Five. So I'm like, when I'm hearing you, I'm like, dun, dun, dun. The Earth Game, dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
At that time in history, dun, dun, yes. dun. Corporate America, dun, dun, dun. Pulse of Consciousness. So we also realize that there's even context to the time in history. If we go back and where the milieu, environment, and group think is. So take us back to what era that was that you're talking about.
Well, the early 90s, I would say, you know, as the kids call it these days, the turn of the century.
Oh my God. That's so funny. I feel like you and I should like have like almost like a holiday, like a party. That's like where we look like we're from the turn of the century.
Right,
what does
right,
that look
right.
like?
Okay. So feel as long ago as it sounds. But yes, it was very much like you kept your Fabulous Five or Six, as you say, separate. You came to work and you had your work persona. You left all your other personas at home. But I did something different and I was reminded of that. So I as you know from a previous podcast, I survived 9/11. I was in the World Trade Center on the 103rd floor. And recently I went back to meet with my colleagues for a 20th year regroup. It was actually quite fabulous to be with them all. And we remembered so many great colleagues that we lost. And we also laughed and you know, reminded each other of the good work that we had done 20 years ago. And I was reminded that I built something that was different than what was happening in the organization. I was doing inclusivity before it was, you know, the thing to do, so to speak, as we talk about it in today's terms.
Well, I just love words. And as you're talking, I have a notebook next to me. That's my NeuroStyle. Mm. And I got epigenetics, which we'll go deeper on, but I got not only the energy, but I got inclusion, integration, reverence.
Mm.
And then I also like to say when we're in our own integrity or in integrity, not only with ourselves, but with others. And so your mindset back when you were early 90s was in an integrative and inclusion mindset.
Yeah.
How can we wear and accept and honor and celebrate multidimensional thinking, views, race, gender, and mm-hmm. age in corporate America? Your mind was like, how do we do this?
And cultural differences.
Yeah. Yes.
Very much so. Yeah.
And cultural celebrations of celebrating. I just want to champion you for someone who is always looking for new words, new ways. And so how was it? What was it like? Did you have resistance? What was it like? I mean, you got a chance to look back on what you built, but what was the journey like?
Yeah, I think it just felt right. It was the right thing to do. I never questioned that it was not the right thing. It didn't fit sometimes with the rest of the organization. So I had to sort of fight that battle sometimes. But it was the right thing to do. And I was very intentional. So I would add intentional to your I words of inclusion and integration, intentionality. I was very intentional about doing it the right way too. And constantly being in a learning mindset, which Carol Dweck calls a growth mindset. I was always open to others' ideas, always open to developing and bettering myself. To this day, I am that same style, that same NeuroStyle of having a learner's mindset. in my classrooms, because the lessons in my leadership class of 7 years ago have evolved to keep up with the times, almost to stay ahead of the times in a way.
That's what I, you know, it's really interesting that you said that. I'm getting chills because when I get chills, everyone, it's like a yes. So when you just said ahead of the times, you know, the linear language, I think it's very important that the reason why this Embrace Your Neurostyle series was born is because I was given feedback that that word was like a game changer. Neurostyle is fluid. It allows growth. It allows growth mindset, openness, awareness. And when I look at like paradigm, and it used to be paradigm shift, I say I'm paradigm progression pioneer, which means when you have an open mind to what humanity is doing, all different viewpoints, which is the, you know, what I call the pulse of consciousness. So it sounds like you have like the humility of being on now the front lines of teaching these young, amazing minds, and also all ages in the graduate program that you're in. And you're there, but you're there learning from them as well. I feel like you love like learning from people that take your courses.
Yeah, well, I believe in the concept of distributed wisdom, which actually comes from a study on flux leadership. And distributed wisdom is just all about embracing that we all bring a wisdom to the equation, regardless of whether you're at the top, you know, if you're at the head of the classroom, at the board, or if you're sitting in a seat, or if you enter as a guest. We all have wisdom to bring. Not one person can possibly tackle and know everything there is to know about complex leadership in today's world. And so we have to take and accept and adopt that distributed wisdom mindset.
Can I go super geeky right now?
Yeah. So I think we already are going geeky.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we need to add some like, like some bada bing, bada bang. We will. So a couple things when you're talking about, well, like what makes a successful leader? That's why I like the concept of neurostyle. Remembering when you have one individual in the room, if you have five students or six students, each of their minds, hearts, and souls are like their own universe. And so part, I think, of being an amazing leader is realizing that everyone has their own unique perception that's so qualitatively rich. So if you're in a room in a board meeting, or if you're in a sales meeting, or if you're in the hiring process, if we're just being specific about kind of corporate America and business and global leadership, remembering that there's a huge energy of wisdom and bundle in each unique person, which is exactly what you're saying, but going deeper in the dive of remembering that, you know, sometimes we all get in our automatic thinking or our frenetic ways, and we're not really in the moment of now. We might be thinking what happened on the freeway, or we're like, oh my God, my next meeting. But when we're in this moment of now and having that humility, that you might be speaking and thinking and feeling one way, but the other individual in the room has their sets of words, thoughts, and actions. So for me, the word neurostyle is also like a hit, like almost when you hit a refresh button, and we can call it awareness. We don't have to call it always neurostyle. It's just for the concept of what makes a strong leader. I think a strong leader also tries to create solutions and also creates integration, win-win. And there's like an ascension and a growth mindset.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it really also helps when you're thinking of this neurostyle concept it's a good like trigger reminder that we are all a bunch of perceptions. Right. Like, so we could get angry at someone on the freeway for cutting us off. And that becomes like our words, thoughts, and actions, how we interpret that situation. Or we could decide, hey, that person cut me off because they're in a hurry to get to the hospital. And it immediately changes your words, thoughts, and action. So we are empowered to control our perceptions, but it's hard. It's not easy. We are very prone to jumping to conclusions and not thinking about it. So I think understanding NeuroStyle and having that concept available as a tool helps to remind someone that we are all a series of perceptions.
Yes. And what I really thought would be cool with you, because you've had to problem solve on the front lines of misunderstandings of perception. Mm-hmm. And so I also like neutral terms that actually allow us to like not say, well, I'm right and you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I thought from an exercise of intellectual pursuits that what if someone's perception and their unique perspective, their fabulous five, and then the intuition, their perception, their reality on earth is so different than yours. Mm-hmm. That even if you line up all the main talking points that from each person's universe, there's a perception mismatch. Can we talk about that? Because I think I like ideas and concepts, but I like them to be utilized and applied. So people can almost say, oh my gosh, I get your perception. You get mine as much as you can, but we're just not going to be able to match. But how can we have peace and being okay that we don't match, that we can have a perception mismatch?
Yeah, and I think that the perception mismatch is what really gets all of us, gets our goat, so to speak, right? When we are misunderstood by someone else, we interpret that as that person is just not understanding me and that's not fair, versus seeing that other person as a unique human being who has their own, you know, they're processing and perceiving things differently. And it's maybe not about you. It just, you're involved in the experience of it.
Well, I like that you just said that it's not about you. I like to tag off a flow of ideas because I am in the book, The Four Agreements.
Yes, I love that book.
Yeah, it talks about not taking things personal. But that's easier said than done. You read these gurus, you get these books, you're like, WTF. Oh yeah, don't take it personal. Someone just hurt my feelings and I'm supposed to not take it fucking personal. Bleep. We just bleep that out. Strategic. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, what you just said though is how do we also, maybe, I don't know, do you have an example from maybe the turn of the century? I'm just kidding. A turn of the century example of a perception mismatch where we don't go into specific names or people, but maybe a situation. It could be at any time in your life, in business or in teaching or in any situation where there was such a perception mismatch. Yes. And that maybe if we had more conceptual, like, oh, but wait, my NeuroStyle in my multidimensional way I'm viewing this is this, your NeuroStyle is this. And how do we have a conversation without shaming one another? Like, you're right, or I'm wrong, or because I also feel like we also, that the sixth sense of energy, well, okay, so biological, psychological, social, cultural, spiritual, and then intuition, six. But to me, for the way I view the universe, all of it's integrated. And I look at, we have our material DNA, and then we have our ethereal or ancestral DNA. So sometimes we could be in the moment of now, but almost like tagging off family ancestral trauma. You know, people have trauma that happens in this life. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were abused. Maybe they were defrauded. Maybe they were sexually trauma. But then maybe there's a family history of multi-generational either trauma. And so that level of understanding our own feelings, that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about going deeper in this discussion, because we have to remember we are so like amazingly complex. It's not so easy all the time. I don't know if you have an example or if you want to comment.
I do. Before I get to the example, I do want to comment that there is, like, human beings have a lot of trauma. We have individual trauma and collective trauma. And the collective trauma can come from intergenerational situations. And so I think it's very significant when someone can seek support, whatever that support looks like, to process that and to become aware of how that trauma influences their everyday perceptions and actions. One, healing is very important. I mean, I always like to say everyone needs time on the couch, but healing can come in many different ways. So I just want to put that out there.
That's really interesting that you said that. So for me personally, I just wish our children from preschool on and the entire world planet would have an awareness level of perception that's like a universal curriculum that's not about religion. It's not about only psychiatry or only philosophy or only business.
Yes.
And so one of the reasons why I like to interview people from all backgrounds is to get the collective resonance of perception and understanding. So I think that whole concept of being on the couch, but how about just embracing our neuro style? That's why it's embracing. How about embracing uniqueness? How about embracing happiness? How about embracing compassion? Mm-hmm. How about embracing altruism? What?
Kindness.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And so I think I know that a lot in California has been done. You know, sometimes I'm from the Midwest and from Illinois, and some of my relatives way back when I was moving here, it's like, oh, you're going to go in the hippie state or whatever. But I actually look at California, a lot of the schools do have kindness, mental health awareness built into a lot of the curriculums. And I think we're also in about to go into 2022, where now like mental health and well-being is more in, it's in style now. Mm-hmm. It's the season of celebration of this.
Among certain populations, I still think it's stigmatized in some populations. And I think what we're talking about here is building social emotional learning into elementary school level. Because, you know, when we talk about racial reconciliation too, and having conversations that require brave spaces, you can't do that in one session. There has
Correct.
To be, you have to, first of all, build self-awareness among all the people. Then you have to build trust among the people in order to be able to then have those difficult and uncomfortable conversations in brave spaces.
Yes.
But let me answer your question about a situation from years ago that I probably would do differently today. I think that's what you're asking. Knowing more about like neurostyle and bridging differences, there was a person in a different department who was rather insidious to the organization. He ran an important department, and he was just very uncooperative to the point where this day we still talk about this character.
Oh my Lord. He made the wall of fame.
Yes. He made the wall of fame. I mean, he was just an a-hole, you know, I mean, just,
that's good. We like it.
Yes. And so
there's some people like that, that just are not in our favorite spot, our favorite trophy place.
No, he probably is still an a-hole. But the way I handled it back then was to, just try to work around him and avoid.
Right.
Which was not the most productive way. It just actually ended up causing me more work, you know, to try and work around. Today, I would look at that as, okay, he has a different neuro style. And I would try to approach him on that basis, not to like create like likability. I don't think we would have ever really liked each other because our neuro styles are so different. But I think with the knowledge of today and the wisdom of today, coming out of actually a lot of the racial reconciliation language that we know today that we didn't have back then, I would try to bridge the differences so that we could work more amicably together and construct.
Can I just check in with you? When you just started to talk about this individual's neurostyle, were they pretty rigid?
Yes.
Okay, because I just got rigidity. Yeah. And so I just wanted to like conceptualize that for all of us that, you know, sometimes we all deal with people where we just want to put a helmet on and just bang our head against the wall.
Right.
Like no matter how we tell them something, their style is going to interpret one way.
Yeah.
And I had that even happen this week. I'm not going to go into too many details, but it literally was something I'm like, okay, I can choose to call them out on the fact that they're being told totally ridiculous, or I can up my kindness game knowing that their neurostyle is so rigid about following this rule and going to happen and what's going to happen if you don't. So I put myself into their universe of rules, which was rule following. Mm-hmm. And I tried to go, how would I want me to respond given that I love the rules?
Right.
So I just followed rule after rule after rule. And I even sent this person an email saying, if at the end of your day, do you need some support? I can offer you a listening ear.
Yeah.
Okay. This is about like something with an office and that they're doing construction in one of my offices. So we'll just leave it at that. Because in all reality, this person's viewpoint was valid. That's the other thing. Just because your one person has more rigidity and one doesn't mean and diminish the importance of that soul. Their reality could be, I have people that have such severe OCD, they're not even trying to be jerks. They just can't help it. Yeah. And I'm not saying people that have OCD are jerks, because people that have OCD get stuff done. People get done. Like, and so even words frustrate me, because you and I could take one sentence out of our interview and people could misinterpret it and it could go viral.
Oh, yes. That's a pity that of today's world that one thing happens among 10 things and that one thing gets blown up, blown out of proportion, and all the goodwill that has accumulated over the other 9 items gets erased.
Correct.
That's a real pity.
I do too. So if you were to go back in time with this individual, would there be a way you would adapt your reaction if you could go back? Not that you need to go back in time, because everything's learning, but for the sake of the perception discussion.
Yeah, I think leaning into that discomfort as opposed to leaning away to it is something I would have done differently, and to listen more. A man I know who does conflict resolution, he has this great line. When someone is angry or upset, they are fearful, right? We know that. And instead of leaning away from it, a way to lean into it is to ask, do you want the opportunity to get more angry? Because when someone gets angry with you, there is a modicum of trust there that they're exposing their fear to you. And it's all then how you handle it from then on, if you garner that trust or wash it away.
I love this. So what you just, so much of what I talk about, I try to break concepts into things like, let's say you and I were to catch on fire and it's like stop, drop, and roll, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what's the pathway to embracing your neurostyle? And like the fabulous five, biological, psychological, social, cultural, spiritual, energetic. What you're talking about is what's the pathway to peace mm-hmm. or thrive when we're trying to embrace our neurostyle and someone else's. And what you just talked about is I often talk about, you know, awareness, self-love, and altruism. Then I talk about crisis, stabilization, and thrive. And I just wrote down on my little notebook, leaning into the discomfort. Mm-hmm. I find that when we go into the suffering or into the fear or into the feeling and have an awareness and acceptance of the energy of that feeling and situation, and then look at the different players or look at our own minds and look at their minds, and then make, if you're able to do this, I know this is like, oh my God, people are like, how do you do this? And then ask yourself, what's the best? Do I want to go for the win-win solution? How does everyone win? Or sometimes we have to be so protective of ourselves. If another person's heart energy or mind energy is abusive or toxic, how do we protect ourselves? So going in and leaning into the suffering with an awareness and a compassion mm-hmm. and gratitude, and just like really look at it for what it is. It's not easy to do though. Like talking about this and then doing it, it's a practice.
Yeah, it's a practice. It is a practice of intentionality. And, you know, you have to, I think, be very aware to, it's almost like an internal strategy session. Because you have to strategize between How can I lean into this to create that higher level of consciousness where that compassion and love prevail as opposed to the ego prevailing, but also making a choice that this is a situation where I'm safe to do that? Because if you don't have safety, if you are being abused, if you are being taken advantage of, if something is toxic there, that may not be the situation that you lean into. That may be the
correct.
Situation where you need to burn that bridge. And that is okay to make that choice at times. It's not
okay
to torch. It's not okay to go torch the entire forest. You know, every time you have a situation, I'm going to torch and burn bridges. But it is okay to choose that in toxic situations.
Well, I actually... by the way, I love that we're at the 11:11 a.m. mark when we're recording this right now. So what we're saying, the same thing. So leaning into the suffering could be being aware of your own feelings of suffering, then making the healthiest choice. And I think a lot of times if you are neurostyles empathic, where you care so much about others, sometimes when you're in a suffering situation, whether it's in the corporate environment, in the classroom, in our homes, mm-hmm. sometimes you put so much love to trying to please others
yes.
that you don't put your own oxygen mask on first. So this is also even this pathway to elevated consciousness is having an awareness of the complexity of our neurostyle. And also, if we can't create a win-win because the other person doesn't want us to win. I mean, a lot of people are not on planet Earth. I say, you know, Earth is the battleground and the playground. And I'm like sort of tongue in cheek. Sometimes I'm blasting my music on social media, wearing my cute outfits, but I'm out on the trenches of consciousness. Yesterday I was making house calls. I had, you know, people who had lost family members suddenly. I'm in that consciousness of like human emotion and how to kind of take yourselves to a higher level. But I'm going to be honest with you. People don't give each other enough pause.
That's right.
Like there's not enough sacred pause that we even give ourselves in between like a day on planet Earth. So when we're not giving ourselves those sacred pauses, like to just even be here for you, I made sure I finished what I was doing at like 10:20. Then I got myself a coffee. I lit a candle. I was playing music so I could get in like, yay.
So true. And you know, a pause doesn't have to take a lot of time either.
Yes.
Compressing into like the now. That's what a pause is. It's compressing into the now, I think. Like what is happening now, breathing into the now, and reminding yourself that you are in the now. Because our thoughts can get away from us. They do. And our emotions can get away from us.
Thank you, everyone, for listening and tuning in to the Embrace Your Neurostyle and Beyond series with Dr. Berger and I. We were able to get part of the interview out to you, and that's the part that finished. And then we will record another part, too, and that will be with you all shortly. Thank you so much.